With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Gravel stank, gravel poochie, stank. Got a poochie, lot of gravel poochie, stank. Feel woof, it on woof, my poochie, knees and woof, at woof, my poochie, back woof, of my woof, think poochie, tank. Woof, gravel stank.
Woof, woof.
I mean, one thing that doing this podcast in isolation has really made me feel good about is all the music I did before we were doing this remotely.
We were like a fine-tuned orchestra compared to what we're like over long distance. But people always prefer, you know, their old stuff better.
Alistair?
Yeah.
Are you well? Are you keeping well?
I'm well. Do you realize we're now living in a post-COVID-19 world? That could have only ever occurred in a post-9/11 world.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if we are in a post-COVID-19 world. I feel like we're in between pre and post, you know?
Oh, we're a COVID-19 sort of, world.
I think that's what it might be, yeah.
Yeah, but it's just I don't want to give the virus the satisfaction.
Did you just invent a cure? Because the only reason you could think that this is a post-COVID-19 world if you knew for sure that this pandemic was done for. It was a thing of the past.
I knew that for sure.
I've come up with a cure that works on paper. Now I just need to get it to work on humans and we'll be fine.
So on paper, I've written down, it dies randomly.
Yes. Alistair.
Andrew.
What we really need, because let's think about the film The War of the Worlds. That's where a bunch of alien monsters came down to the planet Earth.
Get killed by a virus,
the smallest of God's creatures living in
the
atmosphere.
Well, it was like the common cold, wasn't it? Which are often coronaviruses.
Indeed. And so maybe either what this is we've just developed a new super weapon against any potential alien invasion, which could be a great way to spin this bad boy. Mm-hmm. Or alternatively, what we need are just to fight it with some aliens. By the law of comic inversion, we just need some three-legged alien laser ships to blast this coronavirus straight out of our lungs.
Well, I haven't seen the movie Pandemic, but is this already it? Does a pandemic take over the world and then near the end some aliens just come and wipe it out in a sort in a reverse War of the Worlds kind of thing?
Does that mean that for every alien movie, you can do the same thing but backwards? So I guess, like, for example, Independence Day, where aliens come down to rid us of the White House.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Then
in White House Down. No, wait.
Oh, I think there could be one in which the White House... I mean, if this hasn't been done already in a patriotic American movie, something where they weaponize...
come down from the sky?
Well, where they weaponize the White House, where they dig out underneath the White House and they put jets on it and they fly it through the air, smashing aliens with that pointy bit on the top.
Yeah. I guess in a way it would kind of be like American imperialism in the way that they've... it could be a metaphor for that in the way that they've had sort of troops and all over the world and stuff.
But I want to be clear. I want to be clear that this isn't a metaphor.
Okay.
This is from our universe where the government has banned all metaphor and all subtext. Yeah. If something's good enough, put it in the text. And so this is only a movie about that literally taking place and not a metaphor for anything. It doesn't. It's amazing. We've made the first movie about a weaponized White House that doesn't actually have anything to say about American imperialism.
Anything that even seems even a little bit political, we've taken it out.
We've managed to take it out. You wouldn't have thought it was possible, but we have decaffeinated this extremely strong brew via some sort of chemical process, and it contains no meaning whatsoever. I think...
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, I haven't seen the movie Dave for a really long time, but remember that movie Dave? That's where, like, that guy who looks like a lookalike for the president stands in for the president, and then the president dies and he sort of becomes the president or something.
Okay.
Remember that?
I still
but it
have
was mostly a,
mostly
a romantic comedy.
Yeah,
so
it was like one
probably...
of those ones where somebody who's kind of like a bit of a comic actor plays him.
Mm.
Was it
like
possibly
Kevin Kline?
Kevin Kline, yeah, or... Jeff Daniels or something? Oh, no, Jeff Daniels is more serious. I don't know. Jeff Daniels is in Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah. I think Jeff Daniels is sort of a guy who's done really two wild ends of the spectrum.
Mm.
But I don't know if he's done much in between. he probably has. He probably has. I take that back.
No. Jeff Daniels, he's an extremist.
But look, is there anything in this idea? We make a movie about a sentient White House. So the
White House is sentient. It's not even Americans deciding to make ships that look like the White House and send them places.
Well, I was just enamored by the idea of the rom-com element from Dave, and so I've unilaterally made it a sentient White House that falls in love.
With a woman?
With a woman. With a human woman.
Or an alien woman. The very aliens it was going to attack.
Oh, very interesting. Yes. You'd think that when they put thrusters underneath the White House, they were going to use it for flying it around and attacking the aliens.
Oh, no. But now it's going to use it for thrusting.
There's two things you could do with thrusters, baby.
Oh,
and one
no.
of them is thrusting. And it goes up there and it docks with the alien mothership. And they mate.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially if it's an alien force that they are themselves ships.
Mm.
So then
exactly.
it could blend in. You know, I mean, this is turning into sort of Avatar or something like that. I mean, James Cameron has to come up with another six movies or whatever. So this could be you know, there could be a market already for this, or at least somebody won't really.
This is somewhere in the Avatar extended universe, do you think?
Well, I think that, you know, if he's going to set any of the movies on another planet, because I guess it might not all be on this sort of like blue people planet.
Mm-hmm.
We just know that it's set in a universe where there are other planets that have valuable things that you can go to, and other living creatures are there.
Unfortunately, one of the things that we do know about alien spaceships is that they're all very dark colors. I haven't seen a single white alien spaceship.
That's true.
It's going to be hard for it to blend in. I also don't know how many of them have neo-Gothic architecture.
Well,
neoclassical. Neoclassical.
Well, there could be a planet where that is a futuristic look.
Mm. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And it could be a ship that is like an ambulance. So they tend to be white. You don't often see medical spaceships in movies.
No, you don't. There are so many interesting elements going on here. Right, can we please write down White House seduces alien mothership?
Yep.
And impregnates it so that it actually does become a mothership and gives birth to little hybrid White House alien ships. But I also, I'm interested, Alistair, in this idea of a planet in which neoclassical is very futuristic for them, which implies to me that they invented space travel almost before they invented the wheel. You know, what if that's the first thing they come up with, right?
Yeah.
And so they can cross the vast yawning chasms between the stars, but they can only do it if they, you know, lay in a good supply of like mammoth flesh preserved in salt or something like that.
Initially, it was probably just created to get over yawning chasms.
Mm.
You know,
but it was very scalable.
They didn't invent the bridge.
They
just invented rocket thrusters.
Well, so they come from a planet that's got a very active crust, right? So there's a lot of fault lines. Almost, you know, every 100 or so meters, there'd be a huge gaping chasm. And that's the only way to get around with these quite developed thruster ships. Otherwise, you'll plummet down into the lava.
Yeah. You know, it's funny that you say it like that because near where I grew up, there was a place called Laval.
Really?
Yeah.
That is funny.
In Montreal. And Laval. And just saying it like that, you know, it's not that far from Laval.
Great. I mean, I think this would be a pretty cool planet where there were big exposed sections of lava. Like the continental shelves, they move around quite quickly. Is that what they call the continental shelf? The continental plates.
Plates and the tectonic plates.
Hmm. But there are shelves, aren't there? There's also the continental shelf.
Is that just the end of the plate? Or is it like in the water?
In the water. Yeah.
So you go out far enough,
you get to the drop-off, and it goes down. That's the continental shelf. Isn't it interesting that on a geological scale, it's the shelves that are on the plates, whereas on a domestic scale, it's quite the opposite.
That is really interesting, Andy. Could we have a world where you put a universe where you lay your shelves on top of your plates? I guess you just stack the plates on the ground up until a nice place to have a shelf.
Yeah, okay.
And then so that you can access your shelf without having to bend over.
I mean, what?
Move it.
Why
so
do you need to access your shelf?
Well, so you can move it so you can put it onto other plates or bowls, yeah. I suppose.
Yeah, okay. That's interesting. Anyway, is there a sketch in this or movie film? In this pre-industrial spacefaring society.
I've written down rocket thrusters before the wheel world. But, I mean, I don't know what the sketch is yet.
You know how I guess this would work?
Humans meeting them.
Mm.
They discover they haven't invented the wheel. I mean, this could go in one of these, one of the thousands of sort of Star Trek recreated comedies that are now in existence.
Yeah. You know how this would occur in how they would get to this point. It would be if they had some, because they live on this kind of great fissure ridden planetary surface. The local animals, there's like a kind of a creature that's like a beast of burden that has developed some sort of inertial flight that allows it to shoot across these chasms without wings or something like that. It's developed some sort of innate anti-gravity type thing that allows it to jump across these chasms.
It could be a very gaseous animal.
That can
put enough pressure on the gas like diesel so that it combusts. Like that, and if it does that whilst leaping, it goes up and
lands. I think they they naturally, they fart out this gas, right? But once they get over the chasm, as soon as they leap out, the heat that radiates up from the lava ignites the gas, and that shoots them across the chasm. Now, you get 10, 15 of these bad boys, you lash them all together, tie them to your little sled, you can actually get enough lift to drag yourself out of the planet's orbit and go across across the, you know, the yawning, what's it?
That's what that's what Santa Claus's sleigh was originally powered by.
Correct. Yes.
I mean, yes. I mean, I love your idea. I also love my idea, but you know, let's not decide on whose idea is the right one.
I thought we had more or less the same idea.
Oh yeah, well, mine was being ignited by the pressure it created, and yours was being ignited by throwing itself into the lava, and then the gas igniting underneath it.
I think mine lends itself to a better scene in the movie where you have to charge towards the cliff, you know, and hope that you'll ignite when you go over it in order to blast off.
Yeah, and I think mine lends itself, I guess, better to a scene in the movie where it just launches itself and then lands safely by doing the same thing.
Well, you know what we're going to do? We're going to make two movies.
We're going to have a scene-off.
Yeah, it's a bloody scene-off. It's two movies released at the same time in the cinemas, right? Mm-hmm. And one of them has your scene. They're identical movies except for one scene.
That's right. It'll be like the Deep Impact Armageddon scenario, where two movies that are pretty similar.
Yeah.
One's got a big meteor. The other one's got a bunch of little meteors.
Yep. And this one, no.
Except it'll be this one. But both movies are the same, except for the slight difference in the mechanics of how these creatures.
Correct. Whichever gets the biggest box office, is wins.
I think yours will have trouble once they get sort of anywhere above where land is or where the lava is, and then they run out of steam because they have no method of igniting it themselves. But we'll see whether that failure in internal logic affects your movie sales in a negative way.
Here's an idea that feels really obvious, but I haven't personally seen it explored, right? But you mentioned Santa Claus. Have there been any Santa Claus pieces of media? I know he's a well-covered topic, Santa Claus, right? But have there been any in which the reindeer do fly by farting? Because that feels like such a gimme for like a comedy bit in the movie that kids would love. You get to the North Pole, and you're going to go on the sleigh with Santa, and then he tells you just before you get on to hold your breath, right? Because the way that he actually gets reindeers to fly is by feeding them like really bad food, and they fart so much that they blast off and through the atmosphere. But of course, that means that Santa and his you know, and all the toys and everything on the sleigh is being flying through this toxic cloud of farts all the way around the world.
It's a bit like that, like getting onto a steam engine, and you realize how awful the stench of burning coal is.
Yes, it's indeed. But this is farts,
and
that's why Santa's beard is so white. It's been bleached by the farts.
Oh man, I'm glad I'm glad it's that's the interpretation rather than it being like browned by it. You know those people who have like white beards, but it's kind of a little bit goldeny around the mouth.
They're smokers, right? Usually, aren't they?
Sorry,
I think you get that from smoking. Like you can really sort of stain the nicotine stain around the moustache and the gob
look
region.
That's quite possible. I Andy, look, even though I don't think it's something that we would do, I think that it's a funny idea, and maybe there's even a kid's book in it.
I think there's definitely a kid's book in it. Yeah.
Farter
Christmas. I mean, it's
it's
it writes itself.
It's done. It's already made. Mm. I mean, but then... Oh yeah, I was about to say then he's not the father, but that doesn't it doesn't exclude that being a anyway doesn't matter.
Yeah.
What I thought of at, right at the beginning when you mentioned Santa is for some reason I pictured a bunch of billionaires sitting down to a meal on some super yacht and it's a couple of like you know it's like. It's one billionaire who's entertaining, you know, four or five other billionaires, and they're sitting down to this beautiful meal, and the butler's cutting the slicing the meat, and they said, "I don't know if you've ever had this before, but this is actually Santa." And <they're
laughs> to hunt the most dangerous game of all, Santa.
Santa, it's just the rarest meat of them all. Obviously cooked well done so you don't catch any of his diseases, but...
Yeah. He has a lot of diseases.
It's the rarest meat of all. Uncooked meat.
Mm. I think that's very, very good. And I think that's a sketch idea. The fact that billionaires kill and eat Santa Claus.
Yeah.
Just
to see what it's like. You go, it's not as good as I would have thought.
Mm. I would have pictured it being really... Whenever I saw pictures of him, I always thought, oh, yeah, he looks delicious.
But I guess you would have it with mint sauce because I suppose it would sort of have a candy cane kind of, you know, a reminiscence thing. You would serve it in a kind of Christmas-style roast.
I suppose, meal. Yeah. If your chef had any idea what he was doing, he would play on the imagery of the of the Christmas tradition.
It's got your white meats and
episode?
Your red meats like a candy cane.
Oh yes. is this another Iron Chef where the secret ingredient is Santa Claus.
Santa Claus, yeah.
And you've got to make three different courses out of him. Or however many they do.
That's a really cool idea, is the idea of, you know, when if you had a dinner, like if you were a billionaire and you had people over for dinner, sure, you could have a meal, but you could also have a live Iron Chef competition.
Mm.
So that you get
to try
a bunch of things where they've all experimented and with a really rare ingredient.
I imagine they do this for every single meal of the day.
Yeah.
Jeff Bezos has the full arena thing going on there.
Yeah, and he invites one lady who comes and tastes, and she goes, "It reminds me of the wind."
You know what Jeff's like? Always inviting that one lady.
One lady over who just has the most poetic interpretations. "When I tasted this at first, I didn't feel anything. But then it reminded me of my childhood, so I liked it."
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So poetic.
Do you think the reason Jeff Bezos hasn't given me $1 billion is because he's a coward? I'm hearing a lot of people saying that. That's all I'm saying.
Well, it's a mixture of cowardice and ignorance.
Mm, yeah.
You know, because part of it might just be because he hasn't informed himself on who you are.
Yeah, you're right. But I don't think that's any kind of an excuse, right? I don't think ignorance is I don't think many people would accept that as an excuse for why he hasn't done it. And I think if anything,
ignorance
the combination
of the Andy of the, is no excuse.
Mm-hmm. And the combination of the cowardice and the ignorance really makes it just doubly shocking, I think. Mm. And Anyway, this is what I'm hearing a lot of people saying.
Yeah.
And I think it's about time he came out and addressed it.
It's deafening.
And by it, I mean an envelope full of $1 billion. And by addressed, I mean addressed it to me by writing my address on it.
And send it through the regular post.
In the envelope. It is a shame you can't send yourself through the post.
Yeah, I mean...
more easily.
You haven't tried, though, have you?
I haven't tried. No.
It feels like something Mr. Bean would try.
Mm. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Be surprised if he hasn't.
Well, he did get locked in a mailbox.
Mm. As you were suggesting it, I had a little vision of him in a letterbox. And I was like, yeah. Did that actually happen?
He got stuck in a letterbox because it was while a postman was emptying it out and he saw somebody that he was trying to avoid, so he hid. and then the postman had his back turned, and then the postman closed the thing up. Mm. And then he was kind of stuck in there, and he goes, "Hello, hello." And then he's trying to get attention, so he puts his tie out of the slot, and then a dog comes and grabs it and starts pulling it.
Oh, Alistair, this is the funniest episode of Two in the Thick Tank ever, I reckon.
Yeah.
And there's another one where he goes to the beach and he's trying to change his underpants.
Yeah, being in the think tank.
Yes. It's his think tank. We just live in it. I think, how about this as a scene?
Right? Yeah.
Somebody goes to the beach, right?
Okay.
And they do an elaborate Mr. Bean-like scene,
yep,
in which they are taking off their pants and putting on something else, right?
Mm-hmm.
Trying to conceal themselves. It's very, you know, drawn out and hilarious, right? So that's already in the idea. You can't reject it now because I've already told you it's hilarious. But then we reveal that they weren't actually getting dressed into swimming clothes. They were just changing into a different, slightly different coloured pair of pants. And then they look down at them and they look pleased with themselves and they trot off with their slightly different coloured pair of pants.
So that's good. And what if as they're trying to cover themselves while they're changing, the only thing exposed is their penis? They manage to cover their eyes and face, but and their feet and legs. Mm. But their penis is the only thing that's out.
All right. What if it's this? The thing that they're changing into is some crotchless underwear.
Mm.
So that when they're into it successfully, they whip away the towel and parade around in front of everyone, the children, the grandparents at the beach.
Yeah.
With their genitalia hanging out of their crotchless underwear.
Yeah. All right, how do we write this down? Is this a reverse Mr. Bean?
Yes, I think so.
Reverse.
It's that classic reverse Mr. Bean. There's a lot of classic reversals in this episode. We've classically reversed the trope of the White House being blown up by the mothership. And we've also classically reversed Mr. Bean.
I guess if it's a pervert, somebody who's who's always exposes themselves to people, they're kind of trying to do it in a way so that it's constantly exposing. But I mean, yeah, you want the actual, but yeah, I don't know. It's just an interesting idea, trying to not be exposed, trying to not be exposed.
Mm. Yeah, you're right. So they're a pervert.
Mm.
Who goes through this elaborate thing of trying to change their pants without at any point covering their penis.
Mm.
But they're working so hard and so
on.
But
awkward. there's not a lot of reveals if you're constantly revealed,
Yeah.
Once you've revealed everything, you lose your ability to reveal.
Mm. I'm wondering, I'm picturing a thing for men, right? This is a a type of clothing for men that is just a skirt, right? Like a woman's skirt.
Yeah.
You know, with that elasticated sort of waistband or whatever.
Like a good quality skirt.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a track pants skirt.
Yeah. I think, Alistair, I think you're being slightly unfair. I think you'll find that a lot of women's skirts have an elasticated waistband.
Well, I apologize. I don't know enough. I guess if you have that elasticated top and you put it right up to under into your armpits, then it's kind of like a Marge Simpson dress.
It is. Yes, you're right. But what this is that it's only for your penis and balls.
Right.
So the elasticated bit sort of goes around the top.
Yeah.
Right, and then it hangs down like a dress, like a slinky evening dress, maybe with a little slit up the side, which can be quite sexy.
A slit,
I guess, would be totally naked otherwise.
But so wait, so you just have all your pubes and stuff exposed?
Well, you don't have to. I mean, what you do with those is up to you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to judge. I know you like to go completely bare with that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's funny. I sometimes we only can do this podcast when Andy isn't sort of manicuring his pubic hair. That's when we manage to
sneak
fit an
one
episode.
In.
Yeah,
sneak in the one window. In. Yes, in my pubic window. My man.
It's one of the many things that you've sculpted it into.
I think I don't know much about manscaping, right? But I think what I would like it to be is a bloke in a van with a ute and a trailer that says Jim's Manscaping on it, comes around to my house and he lays me down in the front yard and he takes off my trousers, or I do that myself.
And a big pair of secateurs or whatever, one of those giant...
No, he gets a little lawnmower, which he starts, a little two-stroke lawnmower, which he starts by yanking on a thing.
Oh,
and then
wow.
He drives it over my pubic region.
Yeah.
The blades whirring and chopping close to my various areas.
I mean, if it was a tiny little one, because this is almost a Mr. Bean kind of style idea. But with pubic hair. And it's just a tiny one. It's about the size, you know, it would fit in the palm of your hand. But it looks just like a regular lawnmower. And he pulls on it. It's got a little two strokes. Is this already what you said?
Mm. Yeah, that's exactly what I said. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm really sorry.
No, that's fine. It's great to hear it back.
That's where I
like it even more when you say it.
That's where I got that idea from.
Here's what I was thinking about while you were talking. I was thinking about what you were saying. And how I was going to say it as soon as you were finished. I think this could be the second entry in our new new series, Sexy Mr. Bean.
I'll write down Sexy Mr. Bean 2. Manscaping.
I think would Mr. Bean have his pubes scaped, or would he run the service? Comes around with the little lawnmower.
Yeah, I mean, that is a fun idea. But especially, I'd like it. They're still doing it in the backyard, right?
No, well, it was the front yard for me. Because then I think people walking past can see, and that makes it funnier and sexier. Because remember, those are the two.
Funnier and sexier. Yeah, great. And then, because I think it feels like a very Mr. Bean thing to reveal a tiny lawnmower.
Mm.
But especially if he's taking it out of a big trailer.
I'm just going on the internet right now as we speak, and I'm Googling sexy Mr. Bean.
Two.
And I'm just seeing if there are any sexy Mr. Bean, what are those? You know, Halloween costumes. And you know what? There aren't any sexy Mr. Bean costumes. What there are a lot of is pictures of sexy women with Mr. Bean's face photoshopped onto them.
Oh, yeah. There's a bit of that. But there's no women dressing up as like a sexy Mr. Bean for Halloween.
There is not a single one.
Well,
How crazy is that?
I think that allows me at this coming Halloween to get dressed up as a woman getting dressed up as a sexy Mr. Bean.
Yes.
Because it feels like that's something that doesn't exist yet.
The double layer.
Yeah.
There is a meme on Know Your Meme, which is stupid, sexy Mr. Bean, which is just pictures of young Rowan Atkinson, where people think he looks sexy. So there you go. It's a,
I don't know how he could look any sexier than he already does. But
well, okay. Believe it, Alistair. Believe it. I think that's great. How many sketch ideas do we have written down, Alistair?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Great. Well, you know what it's time for.
Is it time for three words from a listener, from one of our Patreon supporters?
It is time.
Well, this three words.
Yes.
This is from Adrian Hernandez Arista.
Oh my goodness. I hear that name and I feel like I've had a three course meal.
You've had an entree of Santa, you've had a main of Santa, and then you've had a dessert of
Easter
Santa.
Bunny
something
dessert.
Something from his sack, maybe.
Yes. very good. Thank you so much, Adrian. I don't need to hear another name for the rest of the year, I think, having
yes.
heard that
name. And you won't.
And I won't, probably.
Adrian, I mean, that's only because of the deafening clogging of your ears from your poor ear hygiene. I don't know where I was going with this.
But I like it, Alistair. Yeah. I want to go there with you.
If you developed a condition, say, where you were doing a lot of mass earwax production.
Yep.
But you continued to refuse to believe in any kind of ear hygiene, which I assume that right now you practice.
Yeah, that's me.
You practice a refusal to do anything to do with ear hygiene.
Yeah, I mean it's probably true.
And it's probably
I stick
what
my
doctors actually
finger
order
in there and wiggle it around. Yeah.
I mean, doctors probably say don't fuck with that shit.
That's the medical consensus.
Let the ears just deal with its own stuff. Don't put anything in there. That's pretty good, isn't it? That nature has invented a lot of self-cleaning holes.
Yeah,
it's pretty
good. Yeah, I think we probably wouldn't be around if it weren't for the invention of self-cleaning holes.
Because that seems like the most difficult thing to clean.
Mm. Well, I mean, I guess the only alternative would be to develop a symbiotic relationship with one of those little mantis shrimp that you see on the coral reefs living in a hole, and they flick out all of the grains of sand that come into their burrow.
Yeah,
have to have one of them living in there.
I wouldn't mind having a little crab or something like that living in our ears. Like just one of those small ones.
Yeah.
Because they do carry stuff out of their holes.
Yeah. They could roll it up into a ball and flick it out.
Yeah.
Or use it to sort of build a wall around the outside, build a sort of, you know, they probably chew it up and then mush it down with their saliva or whatever and form this really hard thing, and they'd build these great funnel-like structures.
Yeah. So you can hear better.
Mm.
And then, you know, obviously the only problem with having a creature in your ear is that at some point they're going to want to breed.
Yep.
But then I guess it would happen at the same time as you meet your beloved.
Yes.
And then they breed, and then you've basically got to have a kid so that the young from the offspring from those two creatures breeding can go into your kid's ear.
Correct.
And it's the only way you can get rid of it and keep your ears healthy but unclogged by crabs.
Well, I guess really that this would explain pubic lice, right? Because what it would be is that they actually evolved to live in your ear, but much like a salmon that goes back to the stream where it was born to spawn. Yeah. They would have to go back down to your pubic region, make the enormous trek all the way across the body, huge and dangerous, to spawn in your pubic region and then somehow get into the ears of your young as your children are born. And then make their way back to the ear.
You think they ride that wave of sperm?
Yeah, I think probably. Yes. Yeah.
They make one of the sperm. They're actually the one who leads it. They know they're the only animal who knows the way to the egg.
Mm.
And they're born with that information, maybe tattooed on their back, which they can see because of their high eyes.
And then they ride a sperm like
they're a cowboy.
And it's one of those relationships that seems almost too complex for us to be able to understand how it was able to evolve. But there you go. That's just one of the wonders of nature.
Yeah.
So anyway, Adrian, there's your sketch. Hope you liked it. I hope you felt like we used your three words.
Wait, I just got to write down ear crab breeding cycle.
Yep. Okay, right.
All right, Adrian, we're going to mention your three words now. Oh man, the words almost feel even a little bit connected, but you're not allowed to reverse engineer a sketch. You're not allowed to you're not allowed to have people send in three words and then take an idea that you've already written down and then make it seem talk about how it fits the three words that somebody sent in. So
no, well, we'll see. We make the rules on this podcast. So you me the words, Alistair. I'll ask you to guess the words.
All right. Let me guess, and I'll see if I got them right. Okay. Let's see. Closeted, Homo sapien, and sun. I got those all wrong. Hang on. No. those are right on. Sorry, I must have guessed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I got
them right.
This
is crazy, because I'm so bad at this, but I can't believe you got all three of them.
Yeah, but you know, it's just because it's, of your garbage mind.
Closeted, Homo sapien, sun, S-O-N?
Yeah, S-O-N.
Mm.
Yeah.
Your child.
Child?
Well, this makes me obviously think of, of children being abandoned in the woods to be raised by wolves and that sort of thing, and having to, this is basically what Mowgli was for a long time, I think.
Sure.
Didn't want to admit to himself that he was a man cub.
Or he didn't want to admit to the wolves.
The wolves.
I mean, this would have happened at one point, Andy, with evolution. When,
yes.
Let's say there were still just Homo habilis around, right?
Yep.
And then the first one to be born, who you would consider Homo sapien,
probably
had
over.
It just clicked over, and
yep.
probably just had to play it off like he was just a regular Homo habilis.
Yeah.
He goes, "Oh boy, this is awkward."
Yeah.
I'm not like the others. Thumbs slightly more opposable, standing slightly more upright.
Yes, yes. Brain pan slightly deeper.
That's, and that's what would have allowed them.
Slightly less angled.
Hey? Just lesser brow. Everybody would have laughed at them.
Yeah, it sounds awful when you put it like that.
Their handsomeness through the roof.
Yes. I've got to say this about a lot of those prehistoric humans.
Yeah.
I don't find them sexy.
Well, this is what's interesting, is that it has followed a trajectory of more and more sexually attractive. And you can tell why they went in that direction.
Do you think that evolution is making us sexier?
I think so. I mean, it makes sense. I mean, on the most basic level, evolution is about who has had sex with the most, and who's gonna get had sex with the most?
The sexiest,
the haughtiest, the sexiest.
I'm wouldn't mind doing a reread of Darwin's Origin of the Species and just see if he mentions the word sexy in there.
Well,
or maybe just
I
a
mean,
word
he's
fine.
British and he said fittest.
As he said, oh, fittest. Damn, yeah. Girl, you're fit, but my gosh, don't you know it?
Yeah, well fit.
Well fit. Survival of the well fittest. Is this our new character, Sexy Darwin?
Sexy Darwin, yes.
Yeah, great.
Wait, veered us towards.
So, and I guess we, I mean, have we talked about this? Feels almost like something we've done before. We have talked about Darwin a fair bit, but going around the world and looking at different animals, and I guess he was looking at them to see what's the sexiest one. He was probably blown away by how sexy some of them were. And, you know, it's unsurprising that he came up with his theory originally in the Galapagos, a tropical island where it's warm all the time, you don't have to wear a lot of clothes, and a lot of those iguanas and tortoises, they are just letting it all hang out, and he probably noticed how sexy they all were.
And he thought these were all probably really evolved. I guess, I mean, he didn't have that word at the time. He would have just used the word sexy.
Yeah.
And then later on come to a theory. later on come to a theory of evolution. But initially it was just he was just rubbernecking.
Gawping.
He was just gawking. He was having a perv.
Alistair, this has been so much fun, and I am having an absolutely wonderful time, but my computer's about to run out of batteries. Do you think we could go through the sketches that we've come up with today?
All right, Andy, here we go. We've got the White House ship seduces alien mothership.
Yes. I would stand and applaud in the cinema when I saw that happening out of my patriotism as a proud American.
Do you think the White House ship would have legs so that it can really do both types of thrusting?
I think maybe you could use the columns for that.
Eh?
The columns.
I could use the columns. I mean, maybe they flip down to become legs. They rotate around, and then two of the outer columns become arms.
It has wings. The West Wing.
That's true.
Has at least one wing that I know of. I don't know if it has an East Wing. I don't know if it has an east wing.
It's got to, Andy. You can't have a west wing without an east wing.
That's just maths.
Hey, well, it would not make sense. It just wouldn't make sense.
Yep.
Then we got rocket thrusters before the wheel world. I mean, you know, this is a world where rocket thrusters were invented before the wheel due to these animals that produce gases that allow them to rocket power around. But then they reverse engineer.
How they ignite, let's not say.
Well, we could say.
No, let's not say.
Then we've got farting reindeer propulsion. This is a
children's book.
It's more of a scene out of a sort of some kind of Santa movie or children's book.
Yeah.
And really also we're putting it out there just to see if it's been done already.
Yep.
Which I often get messages on Facebook and Twitter. To people pointing us towards things that we have said, that people going, that is already a thing. And you go, all right, well, but there's still a satisfaction in knowing that something that we came up with can exist.
Yes. It's probably the quickest route to that.
I think Jaden Younger? Do you know Jaden from... I feel like I'm getting a second name wrong. Sent us a thing basically showing us a coffee cup being held by one of those arms.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and after we came up with the hot drink disco, there was a guy who held a beer with a stabilizing gimbal while he was dancing. That was pretty cool.
Oh, my God. I said Jaden. It was Braden Douglas.
Braden Douglas.
Not Jaden Younger.
Thanks, Braden.
Thanks, Braden. But yeah, but he said the person was dancing with one of those, but it wasn't a hot drink in a dance club.
All right. Well, I don't have much time. Let's burn through these sketches, Alistair.
All right. We got billionaires eating Santa. We got reverse Mr. Bean beach change. We've got sexy Mr. Bean 2 manscaping. We got ear crab breeding cycle. And we got the evolution has veered us towards sexiness. Sexy Darwin. Mm.
Thank you so much for listening to Two in the Think Tank. We really do appreciate it.
No problem.
I have been Andy.
And I've been Alistair TB. And you can find me at Alistair TB on Twitter. I'm at Stupid Old Andy.
We're at Two in Tank indeed. You can support us on Patreon. You can review us on iTunes. You can check us out around the place.
And next time we're all going to have chargers for our computers when we're doing our thing. Nice talking to you all. See you later.
Bye.
We love you.
We love you.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.